Well, good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, the 3rd of May, 2023, and we are going to do the brief this morning. If you're new here, you know what to do. Subscribe, ring the little bell icon, please and thank you. If you're not new here, you know what to do. Please share the show with somebody that you love. Additionally, please check to make sure that you've not been unsubscribed by the YouTube algorithmic robots, because that is absolutely a thing. Good morning, Solitaire Ranch. Good morning, everybody in the chat. We are going to talk about Sudan today. And I'll be the first one to tell you, I am no expert in Sudan. So I've been doing my own bit of OSINT dive, open source intelligence dive on Sudan here lately. And we're going to talk about some takeaways from a preparedness standpoint for us as Americans, assuming most of you are Americans, 90 plus percent of you are Americans, and those that aren't Americans also, at least according to the YouTube back-end analytics, live in civilized countries. So there's some takeaways here for us. The show today, of course, is brought to you by Refuge Medical. We'll talk more about that later on in the show. Bear Independent Brief, 3 May 23. The recent conflict in Sudan is important for multiple reasons. Despite being one of the poorest countries in the world, Sudan is the third largest country landmass-wise on the African continent. And whatever happens in Khartoum, the capital, has wide-reaching impacts. According to the BBC, quote, a vast range of governments are now seeking to influence events on the ground in Sudan, end quote. We're going to talk about some of those governments. There are, just for your situational awareness, approximately, because it's hard to determine, but approximately 17 different foreign militaries operating on the continent of Africa. And while I don't believe that Africa is a canary in the coal mine for the United States of America, I think there's a lot that we can learn from the geopolitical situation in Africa from a potential standpoint of balkanization in the United States due to a failed central government. And define failed, because we might already be there, boys and girls. Do we need to go there? How y'all feeling about the 2024 election? Is Dominion still a thing? Are we allowed to say that on the interwebs? I don't know. So there's definitely some takeaways here from this Sudanese situation and Africa at large. Russia's interests in Sudan is a key issue of international interest and therefore concern. The country, Sudan, borders the Red Sea to the east, and Russia has long desired a military base in Port Sudan to gain influence over one of the world's busiest sea lanes, and which is a crucial trading route for European energy shipments. In addition to this, the Russian mercenary group Wagner has operated in Sudan for roughly 6 years and has been accused of smuggling gold out of the country. Unfortunately, Russia's interests alone make Sudan fertile ground for a potentially international proxy war. Now, if you pull out your maps in your brain or on the Google machine or paper maps, if you're old school, if you have a globe, it's not a globe, it's a disc. All right, whatever, dude. If you have a disc or a globe, pull that out. I've been thinking about getting a globe for my team room here lately, just for purposes such as this. For one day when the internet no longer works, I can point to the globe and tell my children, this is where Sudan is. So think of Africa. And in the northeast corner of Africa, you have Egypt. Right across the Red Sea from Egypt, to the northeast from Egypt, you have Israel. If you've ever read your Bible, you might be familiar with this bit of geography here. Due south of Egypt, you have Sudan. Also, to the northeast of Sudan, you still have the Red Sea. South of Sudan, you have the very interestingly named South Sudan, which gained its independence, breakaway republic, in roughly 2011. Southeast of Sudan, you have Ethiopia. To the west of Sudan, you have Chad. To the southwest of Sudan, you have CAR, the Central African Republic. Now, CAR Central African Republic. This is one of those places where there's been a lot of BRI, Chinese Belt and Road Initiative work that's been done, including mines for things like cobalt that is literally being dug out of the ground by children. And so there's a strong Chinese presence in the South African Republic to the southwest of Sudan. There's that we know of that you can find open source Chinese presence in Russia or and Chinese presence and Russian presence in Chad to the west of Sudan or the left of Sudan. If you're not like, if you know, the four points of a compass don't really work for you. Northwest of Sudan, we have such famous places as Libya. You might have heard of Libya before. Due south of Sudan and South Sudan, you have Uganda, not exactly known for its economic prowess or political stability. To the southeast, you have Kenya, Ethiopia, Somalia, and also Djibouti, which is just fun to say, Djibouti. And so Sudan has a very large landmass. They're surrounded by unstable, to the best, you know, best case scenario, unstable governments and nation states. And then to the northeast, you have the Red Sea. Right across from Sudan, across the Red Sea, is a little place you might have heard of called Saudi Arabia, the House of Saud. They have they got a couple bucks. They're fairly influential on the world stage. To the south of Saudi Arabia, you have Yemen. To the east of Saudi Arabia, you have Oman. And then you've got all these little tiny places, you know, Qatar, etc., United Arab Emirates. To the east of Saudi Arabia on the Gulf of Oman and the Persian Gulf. And of course, across from there, you have Iran, which is known for their goodwill, stability, fine decision-making capabilities. So this region of the world, not exactly super-de-duper stable. There's a lot of conflict, small-scale conflict in this area, and there has been for hundreds, if not thousands of years. Thousands is probably more accurate. So now that you kind of understand how the stage has been set here, in the center of all of this nonsense of the Royal House of Saud, and Yemen terrorism, and Libyan terrorism, and the Wagner Group mining, and China mining in Chad, and the Central African Republic, and the genocides that have happened in Uganda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Ethiopia, you find Sudan. Boom. Right in the center of that. Short, like, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Well, Sudan has some really shitty friends. Okay. Iran, not Iran. Hey, GM, I'm going to hide you from this channel because I do not appreciate your face right now. Peace. Even beyond that, other countries already have their own ties to the place. United Arab Emirates has close ties with the Rapid Support Forces in Sudan. We're going to talk about the RSF in detail more here in a moment. The RSF sent fighters to battle the Iran-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen. The U.S. has had a long and complicated relationship with Sudan and is the top donor to the more recently recognized South Sudan, which gained independence from Sudan in 2011. The fighting is dirty. The RSF seem to have moved into heavily populated areas. They moved into where? Where are they moving to? Did they move into the country, honey?
Nope.
They moved into the heavily populated areas for those that have eyes to see and ears to hear. And despite several ceasefires being issued, none have been successfully observed. The result is, of course, tragic civilian casualties as innocent people are caught in the crossfire between the RSF and the regular army. The UN Refugee Agency has said that 73,000 people have fled the fighting, and that number may well surpass 800,000. What is the media coverage like? The harrowing tales of evacuations of people from multiple countries have been splashed across the news, as well as the incitement of a recently exploitable fear. The World Health Organization has warned of, quote, a huge biological risk, end quote, because the National Public Health Laboratory was seized by fighters, and that lab contained unsecured pathogens like measles and cholera. There's also rumor that it contained Marburg V, which will kill your ass dead about that fast. However, far worse crises exist in the world that do not get anything near the kind of media coverage that Sudan has had lately. Simply put, this may be war propaganda intended to gain public favor, which is in of itself an indicator of increased potential for an actual multinational conflict. So the question there is, why is Sudan getting so much press coverage? Why Sudan? We don't talk about the Uyghurs. We don't talk about all these other things that are going on around the world, but we're talking about Sudan right now. Why? Well, part of that is there are a bunch of Americans there. Of course, our State Department and our political leadership, what was it, last week, pulled out of Sudan and left some 16,000 Americans behind, basically said, hey, you should GTFO because we're GTFOing, right? Another proxy war, says Wade Davies. Correct. Another potential proxy war. And this small to medium-sized conflict, I think, is something that we're going to see more of, not less of, as we go forward in the future. And again, if we look at Russia, or I'm sorry, brain, if we look at Africa as a proxy for what American balkanization could look like due to a lack of strong leadership, there's a lot of lessons to be learned from this. The first is, and it's week four of our 50-week initiative, where we're talking about a different subject each week relative to preparedness. All right, more coffee is indicated, as my pastor would say. A little bit more. Walking 3 miles to work while listening to you, Barry. Good morning, brother. Good morning to you, DJags 91. DJags 91. Walking 3 miles to work. That's good exercise. Good job. Bugging out. There is a huge fixation in the prepper community about bugging out. And it tends to land squarely on this is my bug out bag. Prepper Book Club, back in the day, government would bend over backwards to help American citizens wherever they were. Now government just shrugs and says, oh, well, yep. Well, the government we have today is different than the government we had back in the day. Instagram has finally figured out that I like chainsaws more than whores. And so the Instagram algorithm has been fairly decent to me lately, providing me that good chainsaw content that I want. But also somehow it figured out, I guess, what some of my political leanings are and has been sending me a lot of clips of Ronald Reagan lately. My dad was on the presidential advisory board for Reagan's campaign and then Reagan's presidency as well. And I have an American flag signed by Ronald Reagan that was my dad's, as well as several photos of my dad in the White House shaking hands with the president and lots of documents back and forth. And so as a young man, not knowing much about politics, I just thought Reagan was cool because my daddy shook his hand, kind of thing. You know what I mean? But then as I've gotten older, yeah, I agree a lot. Reagan made the best speeches. Yep. What was that one joke he told? Outside the Democratic National Convention, there was a kid had a box full of kittens selling kittens. And he was saying, hey, these are Democratic kittens. You know, buy them now. They're Democratic kittens. And people were buying kittens. And 2 weeks later, same place, the Republican National Convention held in the same place, same kid, same box of kittens, saying, buy these Republican kittens. We've got these Republican kittens. You should buy these Republican kittens. And there was a member of the press who was there and called the kid out and he said, hey, 2 weeks ago, these were Democratic kittens. Now you're selling out. Most people fantasize about their bug out bag and as a result have a bag full of shit that they don't know how to use and that they've never pressure tested. Shalom, Brenda. And so they're carrying around a bunch of stuff that they don't actually need, nor that they know how to use, because they possess the equipment, not the skills to use it. And there's definitely a learning curve here. The more skills you possess, the less equipment that you need. Guess YouTube didn't like the joke. What's up, Sway? And also, this is in the air. My brother Saw has been talking about this at his Patreon channel. My brother PJ has been talking about this at his Patreon channel about bug out bags. And so what I want to hit on today is that you should absolutely have a bug out bag. But rather than going the typical direction of an American, where you buy a bag and then you fill it full of shit that you cannot use, will not use, probably don't need, I would encourage you to start on the other end. Rather than trying to buy your way out of this problem, take an hour on your lunch break today, sit down and sketch out a bug out plan. And I have videos on all of this in the Prepper Classroom, free here on YouTube. Just go to the Bear Independent channel, click playlists, click Prepper Classroom. Bug out plan. Where am I going? Who am I taking? How am I getting there? Not just the vehicle, but the routes. At a minimum, primary and alternate. And they need to be completely different. Hopefully primary, alternate, contingency, emergency. Hopefully four ways in and out. But where am I going? We should deal with where I'm going first. See, because the bug out location is determined by the bug out plan. The bug out location, BOL, determines the BOV, the bug out vehicle. How am I going to get there? And the BOV, due to size and weight constraints, determines the bug out kit. What am I taking with me when I go? What can I take with me? Because it'd be, you know, best case scenario, I get a 26-foot box truck. I pack up my entire house in it and all my prepper stuff. And then we drive that to the bug out location and reestablish a homestead in the woods somewhere else. Probably not going to happen. Then lastly, as part of your bug out kit is your bug out bag. Because ultimately, all systems degrade and demand portable systems. When all else fails, I need to be able to take a pack, throw it on my back with the minimum required gear, food, water, etc., to maneuver from where I am to where I need to be. Most preppers start on the opposite end of that. They start with the bag and then figure out maybe where they're going to go. And I would submit that's the wrong way to do it. Start with where you're going to go first and how you're going to get there and who's going with you. And then reverse engineer what you need to bring with you in order to make that happen. Also, because of size and weight constraints, again, most people with their bug out bags, because they don't know where they're going, they don't know what they're doing, they don't know how long they're going to be out, they have way too much shit in their bag. This is the little thing that I use in order to, I throw this fan thing in the creek and it spins and it makes water and it recharges my cell phone. What are you doing with your cell phone while you're bugging out? See, this is the other thing that people miss, especially because of the proliferation of this bushcraft masturbation that you find on YouTube, is that I'm going to walk out into the woods with my Gransfer's Brux axe and my Mora Garberg, and I'm going to make a log cabin that we're going to live in while we're bugging out. Negative. That's not what we're doing. The reason we're bugging out is to move from where things are bad to where things are less bad and or good. Displaced people like what we see in Sudan right now. Okay. We need to be able to make time. And I can make a lot more time with a 35-pound pack than I can with a 65-pound or 95-pound pack. And my six-year-old's not carrying a 95-pound pack, nor is my wife, right? So having an idea of where you're going and what you need is way more important than building out a bug-out bag right now. I got my bug-out bag and not knowing where you're going to go with it, what you're going to do with it. And it gets way more in-depth than that. Who is on the other end? Do they expect you? What are your bug-out indicators? Blah, 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 blah. Again, all that stuff's in the Prepper Classroom. But this week, week four of our 50-week initiative of preparedness over the next year, I want to talk about bugging out. And so the first thing that I'm encouraging you to do today is take an hour of time, sit down with a pen and a blank sheet of paper, and start sketching out an outline of what it actually looks like for you to bug out. Okay, where are you going? Who are you going with? How are you going to get there? When are you going? Okay? Okay.
Good talk, Bear.
All right. Thanks, guys.
No problem, Bear. We love you.
Oh, I love you guys, too. All right. This mouse is terrible, probably because I got to put new batteries in it, but I digress. There's a couple of articles relating to Sudan that I want to look at today. But again, some of these talking points here, takeaways for us. The first, again, is the idea that we can learn from what's happening in Africa if there becomes balkanized states in the United States of America. The second is, like I said, displaced peoples. Right? You don't want to end up in a refugee camp, homie. Like, that's not good. And I think there's far too many people who like to scream F the government who would be more than willing in a dire situation to get on the bus or get in the camp or whatever, right? It's F the government until you need something from them. And the goal here is to not need anything from them, to be wildly independent of their broken system. From RT, Russian propaganda, Sudan conflict fueling refugee crisis, according to the UN. Hundreds of thousands are believed to be internally displaced in addition to those fleeing the country. More than 100,000 people have fled Sudan due to fighting between government forces and rebel militia. And that's the key takeaway here. This is a war that is taking place in Sudan between two different factions of the government / military. Really. Think about that, how that could play out in the United States of America. It's entirely possible that we see something like that at some point. And this is not me, you know, fear porn and doom mongering. It's just, it's a possibility as the strength of the centralized government continues to fail and they lose legitimacy. That's the big thing. All governments strive to maintain legitimacy among their constituency, among the people that they represent. Well, as they continue to lose legitimacy, at what point do certain states, Texas, Oklahoma, other conservative states go, you know what? We're not going to play by your rules anymore. Your rules are stupid. We, you know, we're going back to the 10th Amendment. Screw you, federal government. And or think about defectors from the United States military. No, there are not 87 genders. I'm not going to do these two things and this other thing. I'm not playing this game anymore. I don't care if you give me a, you know, big chicken dinner or whatever. I'm out. I'm not doing it. I'm out. Okay, what happens to those people? Or the Mississippi National Guard decides, you know what, you might be commander-in-chief, but you're commander-in-chief in name only. These armories and this equipment is ours now. Thank you very much. You see what I mean? So it is possible. Maybe even plausible, given the direction that we're headed as a country. A spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, the UNHCR, Olga Serrato, is like Polish / Italian chick? What's going on here? Detailed the growing refugee crisis during a Tuesday press briefing, telling reporters that Sudan's neighbors, remember all those neighbors that I told you about earlier, are simply not equipped to handle the massive exodus of people. I would agree with that. They can't handle their own BS. They probably can't handle Sudan's BS as well. Quote, the majority remains severely underfunded. There's another word right there. The majority remains severely underfunded. See, the system wants you broke. You should probably not be broke. The system wants you fat. You should probably not be fat. The system wants you under their control. You should probably not be controlled by them. Everything the system is trying to get you to do, I would just do the exact opposite of. The system wants you to take this medicine. Nope, I'm good. I'm going to go eat some sunshine and eat real meat and real vegetables. I'm good, thanks. I have this thing, believe it or not, called an immune system, and it works really, really well. Back to the quote. The majority remains severely underfunded. Asylum countries will need additional support to provide protection and assistance, end quote, aka give us money because of the Sudan crisis. She said, noting they would require help with food, water, shelter, healthcare, and child protection services, among other things. Let's hit on that real quick from a preparedness standpoint. Yeah, but Bear, what should we prep? Food, water, shelter, healthcare, aka medical, child protection services? How are you taking care of your kiddos? Yep. they had these little nuggets all over the place. So in a displaced population situation, what are they having trouble with? Food, water, shelter, healthcare, aka medical, and child protective services. Those are probably preparedness indicators for you, things that you should focus on. Food, water, shelter, medical, taking care of your kids. Back to the article. While host nations are already struggling to care for more than 100,000 Sudanese refugees, Serrato said that that figure could soon swell to over 800,000, stressing the need for more international aid, which I'm sure will be 100% spent on the refugees. There'll be zero grift whatsoever. UN Deputy Spokesperson Farhan Haq warned that many will die due to the lack of essential services and goods, saying Sudan too is in severe need of resources. Quote, medical stockpiles are running critically low in areas ravaged by the fighting. There's another hint. Don't be in areas ravaged by fighting. That we could start with that. And then medical stockpiles are running critically low. I wonder what I should do here. Don't be where people are shooting at each other. Don't be a combatant, by the way. And understand, this is also super duper important. A lot of us, right, within our bug out prepper fantasies, right? Well, I'm going to take my M14 battle rifle and I've got a split 308 chest rig that I'm going to run, and it's got this and it's got that. Dude, what are the ROEs of the people that you're having to maneuver through? Because if you're holding a weapon, you're a combatant, right? So what does your stealth look like? Is your bug out plan to walk down the road with an M14? That's a really good way to get smoked, right? So clandestinely operating. Bear independent, at what point do you use force? Is that suicide? What if they don't take no for an answer? Depends on who they are. I could and probably will do an entire video on that. At what point do you use force? I will tell you on open channels here, the best way to deal with that is to never put yourself in a position where you have to use force. And a huge part of that comes back to population density, because again, governments or those who have ambitions to be the governing authorities focus on the population centers because hearts and minds, that's where the people are. So you can, if you can avoid the conflict, avoid the conflict. Because again, walking down the road with a rifle, can make you a combatant. Probably will make you a combatant. I mean, super simple. American Sniper. I saw what he had in his hand. It was an AK-47. Okay, you don't want to be that guy. When there's a 300 Winchester Magnum trained on the center of your chest, and you're just strolling down the road, he had a gun in his hand. Not saying don't take a gun, but maybe don't take a gun that's obvious, or maybe don't stroll down the center of the road in the middle of the day as part of your bug out plan in a war-torn area. And again, I know that just bursts so many people's bubbles. When I bug out, I'm going to do this, this, and this. But that "I'm gonna" comes from a lack of understanding, which comes from a lack of training. So back to this. Medical stockpiles are running critically low in areas ravaged by the fighting, including the capital Khartoum and west and central Darfur. And the price of basic commodities, from fuel to food staples and bottled water, has risen 40 to 60% in more than some areas. Again, they had these indicators everywhere. Basic commodities, fuel, what's your fuel storage look like? Food staples and water, what's your food and water situation look like? And most preppers are sleeping on water, man. They don't have water plans. Food's important. You should absolutely have food, but water? We are so conditioned as Americans that if I turn the tap, water will come out. That's not the case. I live out in the country. We have rural water. We have three wells. We have three creeks. We have two springs. We have two ponds. We have rainwater catchment. We have a swimming pool. And I'm still kind of concerned about water. because just the rural water, pipes break all the time. The pump for the stand towers, the water towers, that thing fails all the time. It is not in today's day and age in 2023, while the system is air quote working, it is not uncommon for the water to go out for no good reason for days. So you introduce a little bit of disruption, whether that's systemic collapse or financial collapse or war or proxy war or whatever, or strikes, people walk off the job. See you later, water. And so we have become conditioned as Americans. I just turn the tap, water comes out. No, man. Our modern way of living is the historical anomaly. For thousands of years, people had to go to sources of water and collect it in order to get water, not walk over to the pipe and turn the tap. Let's see. The International Organization for Migration also estimates that well over 300,000 people have been internally displaced in Sudan since fighting erupted last month. Again, where are you going? Even before the latest bout of violence, Sudan was already host to more than 1.1 million foreign refugees, the most in Africa. In addition to a pre-existing population of internally displaced Sudanese of nearly 4 million people. The Sudanese Health Ministry estimates that at least 528 people have been killed in the conflict so far, as well as more than 4,500 wounded. Hey, don't be where the problem is at. But what if the problem comes to me? Could you stay and fight? Who are you fighting for? Are you fighting for this one military faction or this other military faction? Or are you fighting to get them off of your doorstep? Because if you're fighting to get them off of your doorstep, I'll tell you, even in third world nations with, you know, questionable military prowess, they have something we don't. And what they have that we don't is this radio right here. They have combined arms. We do not. Shoot back all you want. When they key that radio and Bradleys or M1s or A-10s, or whatever the African equivalent of those things are, show up with FLIR, forward-looking infrared, you will be a smoldering pile of ash. Your blood and your guts literally will be spilled all over the ground. So you could stay there and fight, or I'm telling y'all, please, 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 please research guerrilla tactics. One of my favorite channels, S2 Underground. How does he close out every show? Fight in the shade. In the shade, bro. In the shade. Because they have the radio. They know where they're at. Hey, we're at this place on this road. I'm looking at a red building. It's a brick building. We've got combatants inside. How do you know they're combatants? Well, they're shooting at us. Roger that. Okay. And JDAM, or artillery, or 30 millimeter rounds, or, I mean, Carl Gustav, RPG, like 50 cal, just a 50 cal, belt fed 50 cal, later house full of people that you love. So again, these prepper fantasies of I'm just gonna, that shit might work in Call of Duty. But it doesn't work in real life. Don't be where the fight is. The security situation in Sudan has rapidly deteriorated since April 15th when clashes broke out between the government and the country's paramilitary rapid support forces. The RSF played a major role in the 2019 ousting of the Sudanese president Omar al-Bashir, who had been in power for 30 years prior to the coup. But the militia group has since resisted formal integration into the military, prompting a power struggle which eventually boiled over into fighting. Internal conflict from different constituencies of the air quote government. Let's see. And then there's an article here. It's a pretty lengthy but decent article from The Guardian. Sudan conflict. Why is there fighting and what is at stake in the region? I'll read briefly from it. Let's see. What's behind the fighting? The clashes erupted in the middle of April amid an apparent power struggle between the two main factions of the military regime. So, Banana Republic here, right? Like the governing authority is tied to military strength here. Sudan is part of Ezekiel chapter 38, said one of y'all. Daryl Calhoun. No man knows the day or the hour, therefore wait and be watchful. The Sudanese armed forces are broadly loyal to General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the country's de facto ruler, while the paramilitary of the Rapid Support Forces, a collection of militia, follow the former warlord, General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, also known as Hemedti. The power struggle has its roots in the years before 2019, in an uprising that ousted the dictatorial ruler Omar al-Bashir, who built up a formidable security force that he deliberately set against one another. When an effort to transition to a democratic civilian-led government faltered after Bashir's fall, an eventual showdown appeared inevitable, with diplomats in Khartoum warning in early 22, that's last year, that they feared such an outbreak of violence. In the weeks before clashes broke out, tensions had risen further. The RSF was founded by Bashir to crush a rebellion in Darfur that began more than 20 years ago due to the political and economic marginalization of local people by Sudan's central government. That could never happen here. Let me read that part again. The RSF was founded by Bashir to crush a rebellion in Darfur. By the way, there's another 1,500 Army National Guard headed to the border because of Title 42 right now. Just throwing that out there. The RSF was founded by Bashir to crush rebellion in Darfur that began more than 20 years ago due to the political and economic marginalization of the local people by Sudan's central government. That sounds plausible here. The RSF was also known by the name of Janjaweed, which became associated with widespread atrocities. In 2013, Bashir transformed the Janjaweed into a semi-organized paramilitary force and gave their leaders military ranks before deploying them to crush a rebellion in South Darfur, and then dispatching many to fight in the war in Yemen and later Libya. So the Janjaweed, they've got some combat experience. The RSF, led by Hemedti, and the regular military forces under Burhan cooperated to oust Bashir in 2019. The RSF then dispersed a peaceful sit-in that was held in front of the military headquarters in Khartoum, killing hundreds of people and raping dozens more. Don't sound like great people. That could never happen here. What we have now as a society in the United States of America is the historical statistical anomaly. It is way more fragile than how things have been for thousands, if not millions of years, depending on your worldview. The system is fragile. The history of man is far less so. A power-sharing deal with the civilians who led the protests against Bashir, which was supposed to bring about a transition towards a democratic government, was interrupted by a coup in October 2021. J6, anybody? The coup put the army back in charge, but it faced weekly protests, renewed isolation, and deepening economic woes. Weekly protests. Sounds familiar. Renewed isolation. 2 weeks to slow the spread. And deepening economic woes. Silicon Valley Bank, First Republic Bank, Signature Bank. Hemedti swung behind the plan for a new transition, bringing tensions with Burhan to the surface. Hemedti has a huge wealth derived from the export of gold from illegal mines, 10% for the big guy, and commands tens of thousands of battle-hardened veterans, or a whole bunch of alphabet soup agencies filled with unelected bureaucrats. He's long chafed at his position as official deputy of Sudan's ruling council. Sudan is a volatile region bordering the Red Sea. We already talked about that. Blah, blah, blah. Several of Sudan's neighbors, including Ethiopia, Chad, and South Sudan, have been affected by political upheavals and conflict. Yup. And Sudan's relationship with Ethiopia in particular has been strained over issues, including disputed farmland along their borderlines. Sudanese refugees have fled in recent fighting to the country's neighbors, including thousands who have crossed into Chad. Major geopolitical dimensions are also at play with Russia, the U.S., Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, and other powers battling for influence in Sudan. Long articles be long, bro, but I thought that was a decent overview of, like, where did this conflict come from to begin with. So there's a lot of, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear here, there's a lot of takeaways from what's happening in Sudan for us in developed nations around the world who are concerned about the end of the world as we know it and possibly having to bug out. And as my pastor likes to say, and I agree wholeheartedly, if your primary plan is to bug out when things get bad, you live in the wrong place. Your primary plan should be to hunker down where you are, shelter in place, keep living life. If that's not possible where you live in the wrong place. Strategic relocation. And that right there is typically for me how I'm able to separate out, at least in my own mind, the difference between people who see preparedness as a hobby and people who see preparedness as a lifestyle. How seriously are you taking the writing that's on the wall? If this is just like a cute fad that you stumbled into and I'm going to build a bug out bag and, oh, I'm going to put some wheat in a bucket and blah, blah, blah. Like, okay, cool. Best of luck. If you live in a high population density area, it doesn't matter how well you do those things because quantity has a quality all of its own. And you will be living in a place that does not produce resources, that consumes resources. And those resources will be in high demand and there'll be an incredibly high amount of competition for those limited resources. And sooner or later, you will get acted upon. It's just the math doesn't work. Versus those people who have strategically relocated from high population density areas to lower population density areas so that the math now works in their favor. And I get it all the time. Well, Bear, you don't understand. I do understand. When I came out of Her My People, when I left the built-up areas, I did so with an infant, an 80-year-old grandma, two other children, my wife, and like no money. Like no money. And here we are. Praise the Most High, thriving. So I do understand. I get it. And my wife and I were both working jobs where we didn't make a lot of money. But we did it. We made it. So it is possible. So it's all a matter of how seriously do you take this thing. I don't want to be in a place where millions, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people are being displaced and acted upon by two rival military groups at the same time. Nope. No thanks. Killing and raping people. No thanks. Not interested. Not doing it. That's the show for today. If you're one of those people that jumps off when it's time to talk about how to support the show, and I can see exactly how many people are on right now, 1,317 people, that number will go down after I say these words. I invite you politely to beat feet, skedaddle, get out of here, have a blessed day, shalom. For everybody else, we're going to talk about how to support the show. Okay, what's up, awesome one? How to support the show, big stretch. Yeah, please like the show on the way out. Godin Homestead, I like that. That's a good word. Throw us a thumbs up. We appreciate that. Patreon, links are in the description of this video for all the things I'm about to talk about. Otay
Bear.
Patreon, just this morning, we discussed yet again the difference between efficiency and resiliency regarding preparedness and homesteading and all that stuff. Like, there's a sweet spot between efficiency and resiliency. And how does one spend their money wisely to be resilient versus the air quote efficiency that we have of the modern system? Like, you know, well, if this thing breaks, I'll just get another one from Amazon. What if you can't? And specifically, I was comparing the cost this morning between a lawnmower and sheep in that video. You're welcome, Jerry. So that video is on Patreon this morning. There's 20 plus pieces of exclusive content per month there. And make no mistake, Patreon is the economic engine of the Bear Nation. So thank you to everybody who supports the show and has access to all that exclusive content over on Patreon. Couldn't do this without you. Saucin is not beating feats. Roger that. Don't beat the feats. Starfish.
Okay, Bear.
All right. Refuge Medical. As y'all may know, thank you, Will Parker. As y'all may know, I'm the founder and CEO of RefugeMedical.com. We make the best first aid kits on planet Earth. I am honored to be able to provide those to y'all. It's super cool. You and I have built this relationship over the last 4 years. And in the last 4 years, I went from doing this myself in the barn one day per month to now we have an 8,000 square foot facility. We have 23 families that work with Refuge Medical. And we're on four continents with all branches of the U.S. Armed Forces electively. And I have saved 73 lives to date. That's amazing. That's like praise the Most High. That's amazing. Yesterday, the last couple of days, I've been at the office packing kits because we do a lot of custom kitting. Like your agency, your organization, your mutual assistance group, whatever, you need a custom kit. Cool. And so for one organization yesterday, well, over the last 2 days, I built 8 separate custom kits. Me personally, with my hands, putting them together, adhering to different standards, depending on the type of the kit, working out of several different desk references that we have, as well as the expertise of the people that we have in the organization, our paramedics and our EMTs and our, you know, MPs and our law enforcement officers and yada, yada, yada. Tommy Salter, thank you, brother. And I was getting frustrated, being perfectly honest. I was talking with my wife about this last night on the porch. I was getting frustrated because the bags that had been selected, they were not our bags, but we were happy to provide components for these kits. The bags that had been selected, well, being well-built bags, it was like somebody made the bag and then we'll see how much medical shit we can stuff in the bag rather than understanding this is how much medical shit I need. Now let's build the bag around it. And there's a difference between those two things. And I was telling my wife, it really illustrated to me the difference between a purpose-built kit, the efficiency and proficiency of a purpose-built kit versus I have this bag, I'm going to shove whatever I can shove into it. And we were talking about this. This is the Bearfac. And I was telling Kat at the office yesterday, I prototyped the first one of these with a piece of cardboard. With a piece of cardboard. So for everybody who's out there like, I want to start a business, but I don't know how. I used a pair of medical shears and literally a pizza box to cut out pieces to prototype the first Bearfac. Then I took those to a sew shop and I was like, hey, can we make these? And Brother Cody at Sojourn Gear was like, yeah, we can make these. And here we are, right? But the difference is this kit, and I want to show you this, the concept, right? Pull this out. As you know, you got your tourniquet on the outside, shears on the outside, etc. But then this part right here, the inner pouch, when I pop this open, this is built this way for a reason, right? There's no like wasted space in this. You got a tourniquet and a pressure bandage and a Sharpie and gloves and tape up front on the front shingle because this is what I need first. This is my bleeding control stuff, which is 88 to 90% of preventable death. It's right here on the front shingle. I can get at it right now, right? And then next, right, after bleeding is airway and respiratory, right? That's 5 to 7%, depending on who you ask. Maybe as high as 8%. Well, it just so happens, here's my bleeding and respiratory, or my airway and respiratory stuff right here, right? In this pouch behind it, right there, easily accessible. 2 big gauze pads. And the reason for the big gauze pad is if I have a penetrating wound of the pleural space, I want to get as much of the goo, the blood, and the viscous fluid off of that as possible so that I can take my chest seals and stick a chest seal to it so that I can plug that hole in the pleural space so that I can reestablish a vacuum in the pleural space so when the diaphragm pulls down, the lungs will reliably inflate. Like, it's not just like a good idea stuff. It's like, yep, I know from experience the little piece of gauze that comes with these chest seals is oftentimes not enough. So I want a big piece of gauze, right? So airway and respiratory, I got a pair of chest seals,
I've got two big 5x9 gauze pads right here, front and back, in and out, left and right, lungs, right? Boom, makes sense. And a nasal pharyngeal airway, nose noodle, right? So I can maintain a patent airway. And why a nose noodle rather than a J-tube or an oral pharyngeal airway? Because a nose noodle can be used on patients that are conscious or unconscious, right? And typically, when we suspect this patient is going to go unconscious, they're going to pass out, stick a nose noodle in them. A J-tube, oral pharyngeal airway, can only be used on an unconscious patient because it induces the gag reflex. So paramedics love J-tubes for maintaining a patent airway, but they can only be used on people who have already passed out. Well, if you haven't passed out yet, you put a J-tube in, you're going to gag and you're going to maybe puke, you're going to spit up. It's going to impede your ability to breathe even more so if the patient is conscious. Whereas a nose noodle, conscious or unconscious, this thing can go in. And they're easy, very little training. Take the SurgiLube, lube that thing up, slide it up the nose with a twisting motion. Ta-da, you can breathe. Right, so like thoughtfulness, right? And then a burn tech dressing, because burns is a common modality in motor vehicle accidents, and a lot of these kits get used in motor vehicle accidents. Right, so like, again, no good idea, fairy BS. It's just like, what do I need? And how do I fit what do I need into this kit? Right. And then the last 2%, 2 to 5% of like preventable death is down here in the bottom in this pocket right here. I could still get at it easily, but it's not immediately right in my face because statistically speaking, that's the stuff for preventing death that I'm going to need the least. Do have quick clot in here for wound packing. But then I've got my everything else, the trauma pack, right? Mylar blanket for hypothermia, wound packing gauze, or for dressing non-life-threatening wounds, a triangle bandage. I can make a sling out of this, a pressure bandage out of this. I can pre-filter water with this. I can make a do-rag out of this, make a shemag out of this. I can do all kinds of stuff with a triangle bandage. Rolled gauze for minor injuries, lacerations, right? Flat duct tape right there because it sticks to everything, including blood, sweat, and tears. An eye shield and an eye pad, not the kind that your toddler plays on, but the kind that you put over your eye if you have an eye injury. The 2x2s, 4x4s, 5x9 gauze pads, right? And so my point is like thoughtfully put together, pressure tested by medical professionals, run all around the globe right now by cool guys who are out there doing the things, and it works. And that's way different than like, I have a bag, I'm going to throw whatever medical shit I can into the bag and hopefully make an IFAC. Like, that's the difference between something that's purpose-built. There's no wasted space in this. Like, see how tightly it goes back together? No wasted space. And got to deploy it. One hand. Boom, here's my stuff. Rather than trying to dig through a bag and hopefully I can find the thing that I need right now while the clock is ticking, while this person's bleeding out. No, like, purpose-built. And so that really stuck out to me yesterday working at the office, trying to pack somebody else's bag. I was like, I was getting so frustrated because it's not how we do stuff at Refuge. Like, we start with what do we need? Then we build the bag around it as compared to here's the bag, figure out what you can stick into it. And it sounds like that's a minor detail, but it's a minor detail that has major impact when you're dealing with a critical bleed. When somebody's dying because they're bleeding out, I don't want to go hunting and pecking through a kit trying to find what I need. I need it now, right now. I need this stuff right now. So just a little insight into like where the bear fat came from and why it works the way that it does. You guys can get those from refugemedical.com. Your promo code is BearNation for free shipping. Everything is in stock other than the Stomp Bag 2.0 right now. So check it out. You know, we got kits that range from $60 all the way up to a hospital on your back. So regardless of what your price point is, we've got something that will help you not die if you are in a critical medical incident. As well as components, right? Like, okay, let's say you have your own bag. Cool. You can get tourniquets and pressure bandages and quick clot and chest seals and nasals and all that stuff on the components page from us as well. So please check that out. RefugeMedical.com. Promo code is BearNation for free shipping. Refuge training. We have, we just put a bunch of classes in the store for Eastern Oklahoma near Fort Smith, Arkansas. So if you'd like to come to class, if you'd like to be taught by, and yelled at by me, as well as all the other awesome people we have in the training staff. Check that out, refugetraining.com. We've got certified CPR and AED, Stop the Bleed, Responder 1, Responder 2, Responder 3, and it's a freaking blast, man. Read the course descriptions. It's a blast. I would recommend, if you can, take 2 days, especially if you're traveling, take 2 days and get the essential responder package, which is Responder 1, Responder 2, and Responder 3. It's roughly 20 to 22 hours of instruction over the course of 2 days. And it begins with, this is a tourniquet, and it ends with team movement under fire, doing force on force against crisis actors and role players, doing a hot extract with casualties while providing your own security. And it's a blast. There's nothing else like it on the face of the earth. So Husky Mom. So does Refuge Medical in their training videos cover field placement of a chest seal? So not only do we teach chest seals in the responder series of classes, Husky Mom, I also have here on YouTube a playlist called the Trauma Medicine Playlist. Go watch that. The airway and respiratory video, we cover chest seals and when chest seals, why chest seals, how to burp a chest seal, how to make improvised chest seals, the difference between a simple and open and a closed pneumothorax, what a tension pneumothorax is, et cetera, et cetera. That's free here on YouTube, Husky Mom. So check that out. The Trauma Medicine Playlist at the Bear Independent channel here on YouTube. Better than that, though, is come to class with Refuge Training. So go to refugetraining.com. Check that out. New classes up in Oklahoma. Last but certainly not least is grindstoneministries.com. You guys know what we do. We do disaster relief and construction ministry stuff. When there's not a tornado or a hurricane, we do Caleb House stuff. And Caleb House is our juvenile restoration facility for human trafficking survivors, aka kids who have been serially raped by assholes. And we have 24 kids in our care right now, with an operational cost of more than $30,000 per month to take care of those 24 kids ages 1 to 19, whom we already have in our care. Plus, we're building Caleb House. Caleb House has a construction cost of approximately $1.5 million. And that facility has an administrative building on it where all of our white-collar professionals, our therapists and our doctors and et cetera, can have offices there so that they can come to us rather than us taking our kids to them. And then there's also like living quarters for the director of operations there. And then there are homes, because we use the house parents model, or we build a home and these house parents come in. And they are responsible for these children to raise them up in the way that they should go forever. Because I'm not going to tell a three-year-old, hey, buddy, you got a year to get your poop in a group before you cycle out of this program. No, we're responsible for you. We're going to raise you as our own. And so multiple care homes and what we call the big house, the administrative building, and a barn to build the barn first, put the construction materials in the barn, then park the lawnmower in the barn after everything else is built, kind of thing. And that has a construction cost of approximately $1.5 million. And so we're in the process of raising the money for that to be able to fund that and to build it. So if you're interested in any of that, you can visit grindstoneministries.com to sign up for the email blast to learn more or to donate. And of course, there's Caleb House long sleeve t-shirts and hoodies, Saw's Facts Not Feeling shirt, and our brother Rex's shirt, all of which are from Sanctified Supply Co. Links in the description. Portion of the proceeds go to help to build Caleb House. And that's the show for today. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all. Happy hump day. Go out there, do good things, be the light, smile at people, help people, serve the Father, put a smile on his face. Do the best you can with what you got where you're at, as my pastor likes to say. I appreciate y'all. Y'all have a blessed day. Shalom.